Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. On our show today, we are going to talk a little about plant health and how to maximize overall plant health or crop health when you think about whatever your crop is. If you've got any questions for us or if there's anything you'd like to talk about that's going on in your farm, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We are live in the Morton studio today, and we are really excited because this week we're going to have three free AgPhD workshops right on the site of the AgPhD Field Day. Tomorrow, we've got a tiling clinic. On Wednesday, we have what we call our Weed, Insect, and Disease Workshop, and then Thursday is our Soils Clinic. Love to have you attend these, and if you're very far away and you can't attend in person, I'd really encourage you, attend in person. You will absolutely love it. You'll get a lot out of it. You'll also get to talk to a lot of other great farmers out there. We'll have a lot of people at each one of these events, and you'll get the opportunity to talk to farmers and agronomists who can hopefully give you even more insight into what's going on in the industry, in their region, and maybe even give you a little help on your farm and just some tips that other people are getting for high yields. But anyway, I would just say with these workshops, even if you can't attend in person, you do have the opportunity to watch online, especially Tuesday, the tiling clinic, and Thursday, the soils clinic. Now, I've had a few people ask me, well, why can't I watch the weed insect disease workshop online on Wednesday? I'll tell you why, because we go through some things that we don't quite frankly, let's put it this way. We have to be a little more politically correct when things are broadcast out on TV or even here on the radio.
I know that's hard. It's probably hard to believe, though, that right. Brian actually has a filter on. I don't know. It doesn't seem like you have a filter on very often, Brian, but you do a little bit.
Yep, but the filter comes off a lot more on Wednesday when we do our weed insect disease workshop. So got a lot of new information in all these seminars. Even if you've been farming your entire life, I can promise you there will be things where you'll go, oh, hey, that's new or that's different or I should maybe consider that or, wow, that price changed. There's this enormous rebate program. I mean, we cover a lot of these things here this week during these free Ag PhD workshops. You can just go to agphd.com to learn more about all those. We'd appreciate it. You don't have to, but we'd appreciate it if you pre-register so that way we have a little bit better idea how many people to set the room for, how much food to have, how many books to get printed and everything. Each day you will go home with a free agronomy manual. And the other thing that I'll tell you, if you come Wednesday, we got a couple other special things going on. First of all, in the morning before we start our workshop, Grain PhD is going to host a grain marketing session, and that will start at 8:45 a.m. Our workshop, the Weed Insect Disease Workshop, starts at 9:30 on Wednesday. And then at 3 o'clock, if you want to stick around afterwards, Bayer is going to have free dicamba applicator training. So we've got all this stuff going on here this week. Again, just go to agphd.com to learn more about any or all of that. Oh, yeah. Hey, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's just going to be a lot of fun. I've already talked to quite a few people that are traveling from a ways to come in. And of course, there's lots of people that aren't traveling very far at all that will be there. But that's just one of the side things, too, is you get to meet great farmers from all over.
The workshop or clinic that I'm most excited about is our tiling clinic tomorrow, because last year there was a record amount of prevent plant in the United States. In the region where we farm, within a couple hundred miles of here, I don't know what the exact percentage was, but I will just say it was probably 20 to 30% prevent plant. I mean, just horrific. And if drainage gets fixed, then there's zero prevent plant. So anyway, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that, oh, everybody should tile everything and all that kind of stuff. But what I am saying is there are a lot of other things that can be done to improve drainage. We're going to talk about that during our tiling clinic tomorrow. It's just so important if you want what we're going to talk about today, plant health. It starts with soil health. And I can promise you, you will not have a healthy soil if you have poor drainage. So it all starts with the soil, But yes, today our main topic is plant health. And ultimately, that's really what every farmer is shooting for. We just want each plant to be healthy, to do well. And obviously, we've got to feed it right. We've got to have good drainage so there's air in the soil. I mean, a lot of people think when we talk about tiling, it's just water management. What it really is air management. We have to have more air in the soil, or I should say an appropriate amount of air in the soil. Roughly 25% of your soil should be air. 25%. If it's not, then your crop's going to suffer. The soil life is going to suffer, which then means your crop suffers even more. So it just kind of steamrolls. But anyway, our topic today is plant health, and it's kind of exciting to discuss this. And I think where a lot of people start thinking right away when we say plant health is you've heard about the plant health benefits of fungicides, Darren, but that's certainly not the end all for plant health.
Well, absolutely not. And back to what you were just talking about, too, I think that most people think about plant health as, hey, a nice, healthy, green-looking plant above ground. And whenever I see an issue above ground, I just get the shovel out and start digging to see what's happening below ground and what's happening around that root system. Why are we struggling out here? Because most of the time, there's a problem below ground that you're going to see before you're going to see the above ground problem. And when we talk about plant health, you're right. The fungicides are getting a lot of attention for that, and they can certainly help by keeping disease off the plant. But we talk so often about balancing the nutrients and making sure we're having timely uptake of nutrients out in our field. So we've got to have the right amount of nutrients out there, the right situation for the plants to take those nutrients in. And if we do that, we've got a healthier plant that can tolerate stress better. And then with each stress that comes out in the field, it multiplies on the previous stress. So if you can stop that first or that second stressor from hitting your crop, you're going to get way more yield. That's why keeping plants healthy is so super important. We're going to take your calls and questions throughout the show today at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today we're talking about plant health on the show today. Wanted to get a quick word in, though, with our friend Scott Harms with Grain PhD. Scott, glad to have you on today. Hopefully your week is starting off well.
Glad to be with you, Darren. Well, it's been was a slow start to the week for the markets, but hopefully we can turn things around.
Yeah, so talking about that, Scott, I just expected that when we got all these trade deals worked out, that we would see the market going up. But instead, the market's been going down. So what's been going on? Is it that coronavirus? Or, I mean, what's causing all this downward trend?
Well, we said when the deals were announced and we were on the verge of getting the paper signed and the agreement was in place, that was just one phase in the step. The next step was we needed to see these sales. And right now, we're just not seeing them. Now, there was a heavy expectation in the trade last week that there was going to be some sales announced prior to last Saturday, the beginning of the Lunar New Year holiday in China. And so the fact that there was not any sales announcements last week, as the week went on, we saw the basis firm up really strong in the middle of the week in the Gulf. We heard of stories of barges sales being made off the Pacific Northwest for corn. None of those came in the way of actual announcements. So as the week went on, even though we got a little bit of a boost in the trade early in the week, as the week went on, the market became more and more disappointed. Now, technically, the trade deal that was signed doesn't begin or isn't in place until February 1st. So maybe we are incorrectly expecting trades or sales to be announced ahead of the February 1st time frame. But getting the paper signed was a step one. Getting these sales piled up now onto the books would be the next wave of selling. Now, today we pulled back. It was attributed to allegedly the coronavirus and the potential for that to expand in China. It was mainly an equity play. We saw the stock market pull back 400 points, and when you don't have real bullish news, it's easier for this. We call this a risk-off trade. It's either risk on or risk off. In this case, it's risk off. So people just take money and they pull it from whatever market they're in. So even if the funds are technically net short to market, they're pulling, you know, some of the index funds may be pulling money off the table. As they lose on the equities, they want to protect other areas as well. So I think it was a temporary pullback. We already saw the market pull back or come back a little bit late, especially in the wheat and the soybeans closed in the upper half of the range. Didn't quite do that in corn. But I have not seen to this point any direct correlation between the coronavirus, and no one's been able to put that out there. There's direct correlation to that and actual exports. Now, it may slow down some logistical concerns if, you know, border certain ports get shut down or things like that. But for the most part, I think it was an overreaction and it was a play of pulling money out of the table, and that just affected our grain markets.
I got a couple of weather questions for you. First of all, in the wintertime, are there many weather events that can cause the markets good or bad here in the United States? I mean, is that going to change anything? Is it basically long-term forecasts that people are looking at? I mean, there isn't such a thing as, oh, we're worried about all this snow piling up and prevent plant happening or anything like that. That usually doesn't affect the market much, correct?
Yeah, I would say next to nothing. You know, we can, in really quiet times, especially when you know, the people that write paper, you know, don't have anything to write about. They have to construct and maybe come up with certain factors. But for the most part, they're irrelevant. I guess you would, as it relates to the wheat crop, if you don't have snow cover and you get cold temperatures, the potential there exists. But as far as corn and soybeans go, you know, we'll watch the precipitation total so we know how much deficient we are once we get closer and closer to our growing season, if we are deficient. Or maybe excessive, like had last year. But for the most part, it's not a winter feature. As we get closer and closer to the end of February and get into that time, March time frame, we'll start paying a little more better attention. We'll see what patterns are set up. And there are a lot of people that believe in 45-day weather cycles. So we'll be watching, you know, those cycle patterns set up at that time, but not here in the middle or latter part of January.
Okay, so right now the only weather that probably matters is South American weather then.
Yeah, South America, the Baltic Sea region, they've had some weather concerns over there as well. There's such a big player now in the production side of wheat and corn that we definitely keep an eye on them. But I think as our biggest competitor, both from a currency standpoint and from a production side of it, we're watching very closely what South American weather is. And right now, Brazil is in pretty good shape. There is dryness in Argentina, especially southern Argentina, so that will be something we'll be watching as we move forward. There is some relief coming for northern Argentina, and the two models are disagreeing as to how much rain they're going to get. So we'll be watching that, but it's not going to be a major driver unless it's a major issue or unless we get something else going on. It's not going to be something that turns the market around. We need a combination of things, one of which being short-term demand.
Yeah, that was my next question then, is what are you looking at? What could be keys moving forward here if, let's say, well, I am personally sitting on a whole bunch of grain. What opportunities do you think there are coming up in the next couple months?
Yeah, there's three things we're watching very closely, and Chinese demand is one of them, of course, and how that demand hits the market. If we can get a short period, a week, and get some acute export business where it happens all at once, the market's going to get really fired up about that. Now, it's not going to be able to hold on to those gains, because if you get a bunch of sales, it's probably going to mean it's front loaded. So that's definitely what you need to be taking advantage of. But if we get a wave after wave after wave, after we get past February 1st, we get 3 or 4 days of sales announcements in a row, we see a firming basis at the Gulf and the North and the Pacific Northwest, then you may see the market pay attention to that. The other area that I think is coming into play this year is a spike in the wheat prices. The corn wheat spread is about as wide as it's been in several years, which means that corn has to follow wheat from here on in a little more closely. So as the wheat prices rally, corn will participate in that rally, so that spread doesn't get too far out of line. And with us planting so little wheat here in the U.S. and some of the problems that exist, and if China comes in and buys U.S. wheat, especially in the hard red where conditions aren't so great, we could get a spike rally in wheat prices, and that's also going to drag corn up. So that would be another feature that we'd be watching. But again, it's likely a temporary thing, so you have to be ready to pull the trigger. And then finally, U.S. dollar weakness. We've mentioned it before. The U.S. currency is so strong. It's not that our economy is strong, but we're especially strong relative to some of these other countries, especially South America, where our biggest competition is. So that will be the driver as we move forward. If we can get the U.S. dollar to correct back, maybe get the yuan in China to firm up, that's going to encourage them to buy U.S. Grains and other exports. So those are the three key factors outside of once we get into the growing season. Weather, obviously, and production, size of production will be the big driver.
One of the biggest questions Darren and I always get is, what's going to happen with the markets? Teach us or tell us more about grain marketing. And I always tell people, I am not the grain marketing expert. And that's why we work with Scott Harms here and all the people at Grain PhD. And Scott, on Wednesday, you're going to be at this Grain PhD session right before the Ag PhD Weed Insect Disease Workshops. That'll be 8:45 a.m. right here at Baltic, just north of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Just go to agphd.com for more on that. But anyway, tell us just about your session. We got about probably 30 seconds left.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit. We'll talk about the markets, but we really want to lay out, when working with Grain PhD and some of the people that have called in and talked to us, there is a lean of getting a plan in place and getting a price floor. So we're going to have an actual price floor plan for at least the first steps of your production, how you would write that plan, how you would get it to fit your operation. So we're excited to expand upon that that day. We'll have a specific plan. If you're not able to make it, reach out to Grain PhD, either drop us a line email or go to greenphd.com or give us a call, and we'll make sure you get the information. But I look forward to seeing everybody on Wednesday.
All right, great stuff as always. Again, we've been talking to Scott Harms with Grain PhD. Just check out his information at grainphd.com. And again, he will be here right in front of our Ag PhD workshop on Wednesday. So just go to agphd.com to learn more about that. Scott, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Yep, you too. All right, we will get back to our main topic here, plant health, coming up right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
You know a healthy crop is required for your best results. Simply put, balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products to deliver those results. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you with your fertility decisions. AgriLiquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
White mold and sudden death syndrome are two of the most important fungal diseases in soybean production today. But did you know 40 to 50 million acres in the north central region are affected annually? When every season has different disease challenges, the question becomes, how can you ensure the best start for your soybeans no matter what? The answer is Heads Up Seed Treatment. Trusted by growers across the Midwest, Heads Up offers a new mode of action to prime your beans to help fight fungal disease. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Talking about plant health on our show and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head down to Kansas. We've got Jamie Lecker with us with Syngenta. Jamie, how are you doing today?
Great. Thank you very much.
No, we started the show off and Brian said, we're going to talk plant health. And I know what many of you are thinking about, fungicides. Fungicides have certainly gotten a lot of play in terms of keeping plants healthy. Obviously, there's a lot more to it than just spray a fungicide and everything's going to be great for the year. But when somebody asks you about keeping plants healthy, where do you start the conversation?
You know, for me, keeping plants healthy really starts prior to talking about disease, and it's really about mitigating the stresses that, you know, our corn and bean crops or wheat even come into contact every year. It's either going to be hot and dry or wet, or, you know, we get those adverse weather conditions that will lend themselves to those plants being stressed out. And when they stress out, then they're going to overreact. And if they overreact, they take energy that they should be putting into growing and producing yield and try to deal with that stress.
Well, Jamie, you're based out of Kansas. You know you're going to have stress there. That's just an easy one, isn't it? I mean, but you don't know which stress. And so a lot of farmers will say that. I don't know if I'm going to be hot and dry this year. Maybe I'll be cool and wet. Are they two completely different things, or where do you start?
Well, I mean, those stresses are clearly different in how they come about. But when you use a strobilurin fungicide or an SDHI fungicide like the ones that we have in Trivapro and Miravis Neo, they will help mitigate those stresses regardless of which side of that situation you're on. So they will help that plant basically compensate and to reduce its overreaction in order for it to continue its normal life cycle functions, which ultimately result in yield rather than stopping what it normally does in order to try and mitigate some of those cool wet conditions or hot dry conditions that we're bound to have happen.
You know, this fungicide market has been interesting, and you mentioned a couple of products there, Trivapro, Miravis Neo, three mode of action products with an SDHI in there as well. It sure appears to be a significant upgrade from what we saw with some of the two mode of action fungicides, especially products that had been out on the market quite a while. What did you notice? What were some of the differences? Was there better disease protection with these? Was it more longer lasting? Why did we notice such a difference this last year?
You know, it was kind of all of the above. Those new SDHIs that we brought out and coupled with the products that people are used to in Quilt Excel have really helped extend the residual on a number of diseases. In addition, also bring with them some plant health benefits as well. So it's a combination of increasing your length of residual, adding another active ingredient that has efficacy on the diseases that we're dealing with, and then also mitigating those stresses in the years where we encounter them.
Okay, let's talk specifically about corn and soybeans. A couple different animals here, but on corn, where are you seeing the best gains? Where are you seeing the stressful times that you're trying to target applications?
In corn, we're really looking at two different timings for fungicide, and that would be an early timing around that V4 to V6 timeframe when we're really determining that year and what kind of yield potential we'll have, and then, of course, R1. We want to make sure that we're getting that fungicide on prior to brown silk and doing all that we can to reduce that disease from coming in earlier and taking yield away. So we focus on those two timings. The early timing especially really revolves around that hot, dry period that we can start to get into going into June and into July.
We have a lot of growers that call our show that talk about spraying fungicides on soybeans every year in the fungicides in the R1 to R2, R3 stage. But how about earlier? Do you see a gain in the vegetative stages? This is probably one of the bigger questions we get on beans.
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, what I'll say is to this point, if a grower is going to invest in a fungicide and only one fungicide application overall, I would say clearly the benefit is going to be in the reproductive stages. Now, in Kansas, we're making that at R2, R3 timeframe. You get into other areas where white mold becomes an issue, then it's obviously more R1 is sometimes where that starts. As far as in the vegetative stages, that's one of the things that I'm personally looking at doing some additional trialing going into 2020 to evaluate for. But to this point, we've seen the biggest benefits in those reproductive stages.
Very good information. We're talking with Jamie Lecker with Syngenta. Jamie, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on again.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Let's head out to Illinois. We've got Allison Bryan with us with Case IH. Allison, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
All right, we're talking about plant health, and I was mentioning to Brian a little bit earlier in the show, I think whenever a grower sees something above ground on the plant, typically there's something in the soil that is not right, and whether that's a disease or whether we just didn't do a good job with seed bed prep or residue management, what are some of the things that the growers should be looking for as they prep their fields heading into this planting season?
I think producers, they want to have an even residue sizing and distribution. And this is something that is going to be done actually, it started in the fall. And so it can be done at harvest time, having that even residue distribution and further with fall and spring tillage. And that's going to basically create an even warming of the soil and then an even evaporation of excess moisture. And that's going to allow for a uniform germination and emergence, so really setting that plant up for success.
All right, I agree with all of that, but here's another challenge we've got this year, compaction. There are growers just all over saying, oh man, I'm going to have to do something a little different this spring than I normally do because mm-hmm. I've got compaction out there. It's certainly going to limit root growth. What are some of the things in the spring you've seen be successful for eliminating compaction?
Sure. As far as eliminating it, or I guess the need for it is because of that restricted root growth, we don't have access to the moisture that we need, and then in turn the nutrients. You're not going to have that healthy plant. And we've actually seen with our research on farm that if you have a plant that's just one leaf behind or one growth stage behind, you're going to end up losing, or you can lose up to 50% of your yield. So we want to set things up for success. And so as far as what we can do about that, If you can get out there in the fall with a conventional option, would be a deep ripper. So we have with Case IH, they call it Tiger 875, the disc ripper that can go out in the fall, and it can try to knock out that compaction layer and also manage that residue and evenly distributing it for that, again, even warming in the spring. And then you can go out in the spring and finish everything off with the field cultivator. We've got our TigerMate 255, and that's going to do a good job of preparing that seed bed and having a smooth surface and a flat seed bed floor, and giving you hopefully ideal seed to soil contact for even emergence. And then we also have our new option, which is pretty exciting, new to our lineup, is our high speed disc, the Case IH speed tiller, the 475 or 465. And this is actually an option that is dual season, and it can be run in the fall deeper and manage that residue, getting it all evened out, destroying root balls as well. And then it can be run more shallow in the spring to really optimize your field finish.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of questions about the high-speed disc option. I would assume that's one that you're seeing across the country getting more popular.
Yes, and it is. It's picking up in speed, and we're very excited to be launching that.
That's excellent. Yeah, it's neat. There's always new things coming out in every area of agriculture, and certainly there's new options for tillage and for seedbed preparation. Allison, mm-hmm. Where can growers go to find more information about these tools that you're talking about?
That's a great question. I would say you can head to caseih.com, and there's going to be all kinds of information on there for our different tillage tools and other equipment as well.
That's great. Thanks, Allison. Really appreciate having you on today. And I would mention also on the YouTube channel for Case IH, a lot of good information. I see quite a few videos posted there, a lot of instructional videos as well. I was just looking at one the other day about getting your planter adjusted and so forth. Allison had mentioned seed bed preparation and getting good seed to soil contact and so forth. Good information there. We're talking about plant health on today's program. Certainly, it starts right at planting. We'll get more into that right after this.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
We know balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid has the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop, plus the expertise to give you a recommendation based on your soils, your fields, and your goals. AgriLiquid has the phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrient products necessary to deliver the best results from a solid fertility program. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at GrainPhD.com.
The Grain Depth Guard from Farm Shop MFG has helped farmers keep their bushels safe from spoilage and shrinkage loss in bins all across the country. And this low-cost solution just became even more affordable. Farm Shop MFG is offering a $100 factory rebate on all Grain Temp Guard bin monitoring systems. This offer is available for a limited time only, so take advantage of this program now to upgrade your bins and protect your crop investments. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
Now that harvest is in the books, it's time to start thinking about your plan for the next crop. Using a pre-emerge herbicide in your soybeans is the best agronomic choice you can make to ensure control of tough weeds and grasses before they wreck the rest of your season. Authority brand herbicides from FMC keep your soybean fields clean from the start. Research trials have shown that applying a pre-emerge herbicide at planting can preserve up to 20 bushels or more of yield potential. With multiple options to fit your soil types, tillage practices, and weed management needs, Authority brand herbicides deliver the pre-emerge power to fight glyphosate-resistant weeds before they take root. How do they do it? Two modes of action keep resistance in check. Rule your fields with dual modes of action. It's not too late. Visit your FMC retailer or FMCAgUS.com to learn more. Always read and follow label directions, restrictions, and precautions for use.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're talking about plant health on our show today, and we welcome your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. I mentioned just before the break that at planting time, you've got a real opportunity to set the stage for a healthy plant for the season. Got AJ Holman with us right now with Bayer Seed Growth. AJ, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Darren. Yourself?
Good, good. I was going to say, Bayer's got quite a package with Accelerin. You're always making changes, always adding things. Can you talk about some of the specific components that you're putting into seed treatments now? Because we see such a difference. Like in 2019, it was just night and day difference where we had a complete seed treatment on versus where guys put naked seed in the ground.
Yeah, no doubt, Darren. So what we're trying to do within the Accelerin portfolio is really optimize a farmer's toolkit that they've got to go to the field as they start planting their crops, right? And so as you alluded to, having a good, strong, quality seed treatment can really help ensure that those crops get off to as healthy as a start as possible, right? It's all about setting the tone up front. And we've got a pretty diverse portfolio of fungicides that we offer within Accelerin, as well as insecticides, different nematicides, again, whatever Mother Nature is going to throw at you. And she's unpredictable. I mean, we know that year after year, no two seasons are the exact same. So whatever Mother Nature is going to throw at you, like I was saying, it's, imperative that you've got the right tools to protect yourself and really enhance that seed's potential from the moment it's planted in the soil.
You know, one of the things that we struggle with is, you're right, the weather is just completely unpredictable. One year, the insecticide portion of our seed treatment really pays. The next year, it didn't make a big difference. But then that year, the fungicides made a huge difference. So we never really know which of those components is going to make the biggest difference that year.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I know nowadays I'm well aware of where commodity costs are and everything, and growers are trying to get by cutting costs, and I get that. You know, maybe I can get by going without a seed treatment, or maybe I can get by going without an insecticide, whatever it might be. Sure enough, though, I mean, that year that you go without it has generally turned into the year that you really needed it. So whatever, again, we battle against this planting season, whether it's cooler, more moist conditions, there's going to be different diseases out there, such as Pythium, that we need to worry about. You know, let's say if even the temperatures are warmer, those are conditions where other disease pathogens can thrive, such as early season Phytophthora, Rhizoctonia. Same goes with insects, right? There's a variety of different conditions that different insects thrive in. So ensuring that we've got, again, the right tools to protect ourselves from different diseases, different insects, et cetera, that's going to help us ensure that we set the tone, like I was saying, for a positive growing season.
You know, seed is not cheap these days. It's a big investment for growers. And when I talk to growers, especially in the early spring, and they're out taking stand counts, I can't say that I've ever talked to anybody that said, you know, too many of my seeds came out of the ground. But I sure have talked to a lot of growers that say, wow, I was shooting for 100% of my normal population. I got 95 or I got 90. How much is it going to hurt me? And I say, well, call me back in the fall. And any of those guys that I've talked to in the fall are like, man, I just really can't have that problem next year. And, you know, when you look at getting that perfect seed stand, what do you do, AJ? I mean, what's really the key?
Well, I mean, that's exactly right. I hate to refer to seed treatment as an insurance policy, as it's so much more than that. But, I mean, really, you hit the nail on the head that the cost of seed seems to only be going up and up and up. And to really protect that pretty massive investment that farmers are utilizing today with purchasing of seed, it's vital to make sure that that investment is protected as best as possible. And so having a seed treatment, a good quality one, can help, improve your seed stands, emergence, et cetera, because one of the last things that any grower wants to do is go back in and replant, you know, and that's something that a lot of growers deal with on a yearly basis, right? It's costly, it's timely, et cetera. So whatever we can do to get it done right the first time is only going to ensure a positive harvest for us later down the road.
AJ Holman with Bayer, really appreciate having you on again today and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thanks, Darren. Appreciate it.
You bet. We're talking plant health on our show today and also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. I guess I would just sum it up this way, Brian. For me, it's getting a good seed bed prep so we don't have any issues out there that way. And that means managing residue, I personally like strip till. I like that little zone right around where my seed's going to be tilled up and just perfect. And then getting great seed to soil contact, getting my seed placed at exactly the right depth and getting it out of the ground quick. And once I do, it seems like so many other things just kind of fall into place. But if I have trouble with any of those first things to set the table, you just can't get it back. To me, we grew up raising, we had a cow-calf operation, a farrow-to-finish hog operation. If we ever had an animal that got behind, they just never caught back up. And I see the same thing out in our crop fields. If plants get behind, it's tough to get them back.
Definitely. Now, for me, where it always is going to start, drainage is number one, soil fertility number two. And then I look at all the rest of the stuff. Like you mentioned, planters, seed treatment, maybe even variety. I mean, there's so many other things to look at. But absolutely for me, it's drainage and it's fertility. And again, we talked about this earlier in the show, but tomorrow we've got a free tiling clinic you can attend. And we're going to talk about drainage start to finish. On Thursday, we're going to talk soils. We got a soils clinic. Yes, we're going to talk a little about how to read a soil test, but we're going to go even more in-depth than that. You will love it. We've got a lot of new stuff for you, as always. So those are the two places where it starts. If you get those things right, you're going to have a healthier plant, regardless of the variety, regardless of the planter, regardless of any of the other things. Now, granted, all the other things add up as well, but you got to start with good drainage and with good fertility, and now you're set. And I know, like in our Ag PhD mailbag time, we're going to talk a little about fertility as well, because I know for sure there's one of the questions in there talking about soils a little bit, but it's more than just N, P, and K. And for that matter, even N, P, and K, do you really know what you need and what you need at each different point in the year? It's so unbelievably important. And just think of all the thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars you spend every year on fertility. And yet, I mean, even for me, I have to ask myself all the time, am I spending those dollars the right way? If I spent the dollars just a little differently, could I have more yield? Could I have more plant health, which leads to yield? Would I set myself up for better crops in the future? So lots to know there. All right. Anything else you want to cover?
No, Brian, we may get into some of it during the Ag PhD mailbag time here as well.
It's the mailbag!
All right, this one comes from Christian up in Manitoba. Like many farms in the north, we had dry beans. We got hit by 3 feet of snow in September. When the snow was gone, we were able to resume harvest, but only got 500 pounds instead of 2,500 pounds in the tank. So we got 2,000 pounds laying out there on the ground of these dry beans. I'm wondering, with the nutrient value, what can we really count on being available for next year's crop? I looked at your fertilizer removal app. Obviously, there's significant fertility in those seeds.
Yeah, I would say if you've got 2,000 pounds out there, look at what the grain removal is on 2,000 pounds. And that's pretty much what you're going to have for fertility out there. So, yes, it is relatively ample. And, you know, that is one of the bright sides. Now, I realize it stinks, okay? Believe me, we've had similar things happen to us in the past, too. But you always have to look at, okay, I had a horrible crop. Whether my ground got flooded out, you know, I got hailed out, what happened to you happens. The point is, we got to be thinking about next year all the time. And honestly, that's one of my frustrations too with sometimes when we say, you know what, I'm going to let the corn dry down in the field and then it doesn't get done timely enough so tillage or fertility can get done in the fall. And this is one of the big things our dad always talked to us about. He's like, yeah, you can think about this year and minimizing costs for this year too. And I realize I'm a little off topic from your question. But the point is, we got to be thinking about the long term all the time, all the time. And if I get behind one year, that puts me behind again the next year. Granted, if I live in Alabama or North Carolina where I have all kinds of heat, if I'm in the southern United States, it's not as big a deal as when I'm in Canada or the northern United States. So we got to be thinking about these things all the time. And yeah, with that soybean deal, absolutely. Again, to specifically answer that question.
Dry beans.
There are nutrients on the soil, will be in the soil. They'll most likely come available for this next crop as well.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's Dual React Control System. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic herbicides from Atticus LLC. Tough broadleaf weeds are a hassle, but they're no match for Cavallo from Atticus. Cavallo delivers fast, contact, and residual control so your corn, soybean, and sorghum crops can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio today, and we're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time answering your questions. You can call us right now if you've got a question or a topic you'd like to discuss at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com, which is exactly what Doug from Minnesota just did. He said, I'm attaching some soil samples from the spring of 2019. I didn't get any done last fall. Been listening to your radio show now for about a year and a half. Have attended some events along the way, including your field day last year, which was cool. I will be attending your workshops coming up this week, and I've just been farming about 3 years. He said, also, I attended Neil Kinsey's seminar you had last March, so I sent a few of the samples to his lab as well just to compare. I'm not really sure entirely what I'm looking at here. Wanted to see what your thoughts are if I was going to plant soybeans and corn. I can do in-furrow and 2x2 fertility, just an FYI in case that's something you would recommend. Okay, Doug, you say you're not really sure what to do, but man, you have marked up your soil samples. I'm proud of you. That's awesome. You wrote a lot of the ranges and things that we would normally be looking for. You even made a comment on the potassium. You said, Brian would like to see this number be 7. Brian, is that right?
I think we talked about this, I don't know, a week or two ago on the show. But, I mean, if we had one number to pick, sure. I would like my base saturation K on my farm to be 7, maybe even getting close to 8. But we got to look at a couple of things. First of all, what's our number one yield limiting factor? And two, can we afford to do some of these things? Or let me restate that. Can we apply fertilizer profitably? So the whole goal here is, yes, we're trying to increase yields, but at the same time, we have to have a profit. Now, when we start talking about nutrients like potassium and phosphorus, they're not leaving your soil. He's got medium to heavy soil. It's not going anywhere. It's not going to leach out in the northern part of the United States. So the only thing is, well, my point is simply, we can talk about over-applying, or in other words, a build program. Well, if you're going to take the entire expense in year one on a build program, obviously year one is not going to look as good as year two, right? So if you simply amortize that over time, just like you depreciate equipment, I mean, you don't buy a tractor and expect, well, it has to pay for itself in year one or I can't buy the tractor. Of course not. And it's the same kind of thing with a lot of these fertility things. So anyway, with his, he sent samples into both Midwest Labs and Kinsey, and for the most part, fairly similar data. I mean, just a few quick comments that I would make. First of all, with soil pH, and he's got some high, some low. With the low pH, we got to be careful about over-liming. So that's probably the number one thing I talk about anymore with liming, because we've done it ourselves. We've had stuff in the 4s even, and still over-limed. So just don't over-lime. I wouldn't put any lime on anything that's above 6 for pH. He's got just a few spots that are a little below 6. Just put a splash of lime out there and you're good. The biggest thing is on the potassium deal, he's got a lot of stuff that's in the 1s up to, at the most, there's a 3.7, but a lot of it's in the 2s and low 2s or 1s. That's not good. I can promise you, you're going to get a good return on investment on that stuff. And then we start looking at micronutrients. You know, I think we talk about this almost every day, but micronutrients just simply don't get enough press. I mean, he's really low on boron, really low on copper. His manganese is a little low. His zinc is a little low if you're trying to get it in ratio with phosphorus. He's got some fairly decent phosphorus levels. Well, roughly, we'd like to see a 10-to-1 ratio of phosphorus to zinc. And so, you know, whether it's Midwest Labs or Kinsey, I don't care where the data is coming from. We look at this and we go, you know, you need some zinc, definitely in some spots, maybe all the spots. So just a lot of things that need to get addressed. And, you know, I think, Darren, you said one of the most important things almost right away. You said Doug's been farming for 3 years. What do we know about a lot of 3-year farmers? They aren't set up like, let's say, Darren and me, who've been farming for 30 years. You know, we've been doing this for a long time. We have all the experience. And also, we have at least a few dollars sitting out there, too. So it's not like we're on our last dollar. So literally, if I want to go in and change everything on this soil test, I will. And I'll do it year one. Whereas for Doug, he's got to be smart about how he spends the dollars. So what I'd be doing is I'd just at least be on a build program with almost all these nutrients that I mentioned, potassium especially, zinc, sulfur, copper, boron. There are a couple spots or one spot at least of phosphorus. You got to build a little bit. Throw a little bit of lime out there. So just, I wouldn't just say, well, I only have a few dollars, so I'm just going to put nitrogen out, or I'm just going to put nitrogen and potassium out. Do at least a little bit of something with some of the micros. Last thing that I'll throw in, because he did mention he could do something with the planter. We always do a little something with the planter. Now, we don't do a lot. We will usually put a little bit of P and K out there, like Pro Germinator, Sure K, just low salt, products at a low rate, and then we'll do a blend of micros as well at that time. Keep your costs down there, and then keep working on building your overall soil on the other side. And then once you start getting things up, well, now you can start ratcheting up the fertilizer on both ends when things start to get better. And they will get better. You just need a little more fertility.
Hey, thanks, Doug. Really appreciate the questions, and hope to talk to you more this week at the Ag PhD workshops. Again, just along Doug's line there, there are workshops, three Ag PhD workshops coming up this week. You can find all the details at agphd.com, and you can pre-register there as well. Got a question from Connie. She said, I am a wife of a husband who can't wait for 2019 to be over. I tell you what, Connie, 2019 is not going to be over for a while for a lot of farmers. Unfortunately, you're in the same boat too. She said, got beans out in the field. They're still wet, still 17%. And she said, when they've tried to take them, still a lot of pods within the beans. And then some are not being broken open at all. And half of those pods heading out the back of the combine. She said they're trying to make as many adjustments as they can.
Yeah.
Just wondering, what about if they waited until it got even colder, would that be a better deal for them? Or do you think it would make the problem worse? Or do you have any other suggestions?
Well, I don't know how you're going to get much colder than January, but the whole thing is we always are looking at, can we bust the beans out of the pod? Can we get the pods to open when we start talking about combining? Now, I don't care much if they're 17%. I'm fine with that because we have bins where we have automatic fan controls, and it's awesome. I mean, it has been a lifesaver the last 2 years. And I'll tell you why we invested in that. It was about 10 years ago, roughly, off the top of my head. I don't remember the exact year. But we had a fall where we had to wait, and we waited. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, the beans are fit. But they stayed at 16, 17% moisture the whole time. And I'm just going, come on. We got to get going because we got corn to do, everything else. So we at least started doing some beans. And personally, I tried, because I've always run our grain dryers, I tried to shut our fans on and off and do this myself manually. Well, people are busy. I mean, you can't do that and just run over to our bin site, run back, run over, run back. Oh my gosh. And I didn't time it right. That I'm not going to say it was a disaster, but that didn't work out well with either automatic controls or even look at Steps GMS. You could do it right from your phone. Well, then it's pretty easy and you can get alerts and everything else. My point here is simply this. Take a look at going into next fall. Could I get some bin fan controls and then I can take those beans out in the fall? Because when you start talking winter, are we going to get great conditions to get those out of the pods in the winter? Maybe, but I mean, it just gets a lot riskier. And then you have my biggest fear always is snow going to take those beans right off the stem and am I going to lose them?
Yeah, it's a tough situation, but good luck to you, Connie. Really hope 2019 ends really soon for you and you can get that crop safely in the bin. Brian had a question. This one comes from Phil, and he's down in Texas. He said, I have an absentee landowner service in the hill country of Texas. And I've got a client that wants to convert some oat pastures that were previously planted for deer plots into native grass pastures. What would be the best process to get the maximum result?
Well, anytime I'm going to put in a long-term crop, I'm going to take a hard look at the fertility right away. And then when we talk about grasses, like soybeans. When I plant soybeans, we can pop those beans out of the ground a lot of times in 3 to 7 days. It's awesome. But for grass, it's just much more challenging. So you have to have great seed-to-soil contact. And so, in other words, it needs to be seeded well, and then I'd probably even run a packer over it so you get that good seed-to-soil contact. So those are probably the two big things I'm looking at: fertility, seed-to-soil contact.
Hey, thanks, Phil. Really appreciate the question. Thanks to you for listening today. Really appreciate that. And we ask you to join us each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. And of course, join us at the Ag PhD workshops coming up this week as well. You can find all the details and pre-register at agphd.com.